Okay, Rob, then Billy.
You know, just a couple of quick points I want to pick up tonight. My understanding was that there was a publicly funded taxpayer money was in their survey and whether or not the flags you can rent from the city hall. And that was 90% in favour that there should be no change. But that democracy was overturned and people totally ignored that, haven't paid for it. On the cultural aspect of it, myself and two other unions have a meeting in the Sinn Féin office, our Carol Hallahan and her advisor. We wanted some assistance on a cross-community project about St. Colin Banas at Sinn, and we were promptly shown the door and basically told, don't concern yourself with the Saints, they're ours, they're not your culture. And all of my culture is chilling my knuckles down the road with a flag in my hand and looking at here. I've listened to a bit about the three flags, which I haven't seen in Dublin, but I noticed on the poll that Sinn Féin is doing, I think, 24% each. So maybe we'll see some generosity of spirit, and maybe very shortly if Sinn Féin take the lead, that they will fly two flags in Dublin and set an example that we can learn something from. But my question is this. Is the trouble at our door about a march or to all the panel? Or do you think the trouble at our door is about Sinn Féin RA desperately hanging on to power of that area and that the Republicans are taking control of that area and they can't be seen to make any compromises?
Let you go first. Bert wants to breathe, I think.
Well, the issue our door is the parade. I refer you back to the last election when Sinn Féin had a clear mandate in relation to having councillors elected in that area. One of the people from Cork stood in that election and wasn't elected. So Sinn Féin aren't running in fear of an electoral intervention by people who oppose their political agenda or their political losses in relation to the situation in Ardoyne. And I think the best way of a scientific approach to establishing who has support and who has support in Ardoyne is through elections. A democratic politics isn't based on surveys. It's based on democratic votes, and people have a mandate as a result of that vote, and because of their mandate, they have votes like they have in Belfast City Council. They've also discussions and debates, and they're all up to any democratic process and any democratic vote. So I think it's important to understand that. Regarding the Carney column, I can't answer that. I wasn't there. I would be very, very shocked indeed. I'm not saying you're telling lies, but if that was a response, you know what I mean? It would be unacceptable for a start, but obviously we'll have to talk to Carl in relation to that.
Notice that you didn't mention that these other ones and sort of like Ardoyne were dissidents. You don't use the word dissidents, because you see them as fellow Republicans with the same aims as yourself to achieve the same goal.
Well, they're called, they're branded dissidents. I think that's conferring a badge of honour on them, because not every dissident is a bad person. Because you have a different opinion from someone else, can make you a dissident. I'm trying to answer your question.
Okay, let Mervyn in there. Okay.
First of all, I believe in the sainthood of all believers, so that gets me out of that one.
A bit of theology there, serious.
I have to say, I think it would be naive to think there isn't Republican politics based out in Ardoyne. With Cork, I think they got 900 votes, so there's substantial electoral support for them in that community. So I think we would be naive to think that it's not being played out. And the Orange and the Parade are suffering because of that.
Okay, Billy, then Brendan, come in there at the back. I'll come back to you, John, and then this gentleman just tucked in here at the back. Billy, you go first there.
Sean, just on your aspect of identity, my two grandfathers and my uncle fought in the Great Wars and fought under the British flag alone in this country, Northern Ireland. Why is Sinn Féin and others looking for that there? I know they're looking for a shared identity, but is England, Scotland and Wales looking for this shared identity as well? I'm sure there's Irish people living over there, a lot of them over in London, aren't doing any shouting about flags flying along with the Union Jack. And the other question is Sinn Féin saying about the Ardoyne? The Ardoyne one is walking up past the road, which I think Mervyn's right there saying it's political. Because the parade on the 12th of July can pass the short strand on the way there and on the way back. And it's right across the road from each other. The same as Ardoyne. And I can go look at there unless there's the protesters in the Chapel Grounds armed with paint bombs bottles and bricks to throw at the Orange Parade goodbye and start in trouble. But nobody hears about that from Sinn Féin. Sinn Féin comes out and speaks to us saying, those bloody Protestants are at it again.
Okay, Sean.
There was recently a referendum in Scotland because people felt they were Scottish and wanted Scottish independence. So this identity isn't just a question. Let me finish.
They got a very substantial
Sinn Féin stayed out of it. Stayed out of it, completely stayed out of it.
Somebody put the big thing on the mountain.
Okay, Billy,
that's right. So the question of identity is a very important question, but it's not specific to Irish nationalism. It's also Scottish. Some people in Wales feel that they're Welsh. Some would like Welsh independence, etc. It's how we deal with the question of identity. You know, if I'm Irish and you feel British, how do we accommodate each other? How can you respect my Irishness? How can I respect your Britishness? So that's a question that we have to deal with. We have to try and get some resolution to it.
But you're not going to get that, sir.
How are you not going to get it?
Well, how are you going to get it, sir? The IRA has fought the British government for 30 odd years, even longer, and they never got it. So the
never got what?
They never got the victory they were looking for United Ireland against the British government. So they took a step back and says, we'll take it this way, by trying to go around the political way of it. And the around that way, so they have, and the British government is at fault too, that they says, oh, keep these guys quiet, we'll give them a wee bit here and there, and they're living in a way of our culture, so they are. And Sinn Féin is taking that there and sitting back and let the Protestant people cause trouble because of this here.
Would you not welcome the fact that Republicans have embraced politics?
Oh, I don't intend to be in the politics not there.
Well,
the identity was Britain here. This was all British.
It's not all British. So that's a problem. We're not all British. I don't feel British. I feel Irish. So how do you accommodate my Irishness?
No. Okay, listen. Let me see. Brendan, okay. Let's listen in to Brendan's question and then this gentleman at the back here. No, sorry, Brendan first. Sorry. This guy here, sorry.
Mervyn and Sean, you've been working together now for a long number of years, and you've probably gained an insight that a lot of people in your base constituencies don't have. So I want to ask you both the same question, and it's not meant to be mischievous, it's a serious question. Could I ask both of you to name one example of an aspect of the parading tradition that you think needs to be preserved, and an aspect of the parading tradition that needs to be changed, or perhaps from your point of view, Mervyn, refined?
The master mediator, Brendan McAllister.
I think if there are any parades, and I think they're personally very few maybe nowadays, that are deliberately a route is chosen or something that's played to deliberately cause offence, I think that's wrong and needs change. I've no qualms about saying that. I think there has been immense changes over the years, but I have to say every time changes come and you move on or feel you're moving on building a relationship, for us the goalpost seems to shift because it becomes something else. It becomes the music, it becomes the flags, it becomes, you know. But I do think no way would I want to be involved in any organisation that deliberately created to cause offence.
As I stated earlier, the vast, vast majority of parades are not contentious, and most of them would be of an Orange or Unionist tradition, etc. There are parades from a nationalist perspective, and nationalists would feel they're highly offensive, and this is where the objections are raised to. And some of the issues, and I mentioned this earlier, there are different dynamics in relation to various parade disputes. Some are rude. Some are the activities of some of the bonds. Some are the behaviour of some of the Orange men on display, which I witnessed recently myself on the Springfield Road, etc. So there are a number of various issues which we need to deal with. Now, if I'm loyal to a particular marching body, I think it's incumbent upon me to ensure that that body of its marching is on its best behaviour, because that's a reflection of that organisation. And under no circumstances would I allow anyone to undermine, for example, the integrity of the protest that I might organise, because that's a reflection on the essence of that area. And I think if organisations took that on board and went out of their way to ensure there's a very strict code of conduct in relation to behaviour, what flags are on display, etc., taking into account the sensitivities of the oral tradition, I think it would go a long way, a very long way, towards resolving outstanding parading and protest disputes.
Okay, this gentleman here.
My question is to the panel. I'm looking around the audience and I'm struggling to find any sort of representation from bonds. I'm just wondering, was any embedded? Do you not think their opinion is valued in a meeting like this?
Yeah, I mean, there was a block email probably sent out to about 100 people, and I guess some members of bands would have got that.
I remember individuals, but there's associations. Was so this what officially embedded? I think their opinion should be valued in meetings like this.
And when I pass your email, and I'll make sure in the future you get anything that's happening there, so there's no difficulty with that at all. So there's
a comment from me about bonds. I have to say, some people try and drive a wedge and say that it's a bonds and all the Orient men are decent. No, I don't see. I think we're all decent, and then to say a phrase that I have to say. But what he called that, I don't think. I think the bonds and the lawyers work well together. I think there's been changes in both over the years. Both have tried to accommodate things with regard to uniforms, flags, and playing. And I think it's important to work together. And I don't buy into this. I don't buy into the country city split. I don't buy into the bonds loyal order split. I think we need a solution that's fair to us all, and not just one section.
To get a resolution, we need to hear everyone's perspective, including the bonds. I have an issue with bonds. Some of the bonds I have an issue with are Republican bonds because of the behaviour of those bonds. I've openly challenged them. That's a record. I wrote an article recently for the Belfast Telegraph, saying that the culture within republicanism in terms of how republicans commemorate events needs to change. It's not just about parading. I think there are other ways and means of commemorating particular events and needs to embrace all traditions. I'll give an example. The Covenant centenary recently, we organised, I think, 3-4 events in Belfast in relation to the Covenant, because all our history is shared. It's not a unionist history or a republican history, it's a shared history. So while unionists would see the Covenant as a massive event for them, and quite rightly, what you need to factor into that account is, well, how did nationalists see the Covenant? If we're talking about the Easter Rising in 1916, how did unionists see, and how did they feel? They see it as an act of betrayal. What happened in 1916? So because history is complex, because it's shared, for us to commemorate any event, it has to be a shared perspective, and every perspective has to be heard. I remember having a conversation with an Orange man who said, 1916 is coming up. Wouldn't it be great if we could have two exhibitions in the one hall? One about the Somme of 1916 and one about Easter. And they get intermixed and intermingled in relation to people. And I thought it was a brilliant idea. Because here's, you know, because if you mention 1916 to a nationalist republican, you automatically think Easter. If you mention it to someone from a unionist background, probably automatically think of the Somme. So why not bring the two together? Because it's a shared history. You know, we're still living with the consequences of what happened in the Covenant, of what happened in 1916. So we share that. So why can't we discuss it again? I also had a conversation with people from a loyalist background who were saying to me, are Republicans going to march through the city centre to commemorate 1916? I says, no. He says, I'm really glad to hear it, because that's what I was worried about. You know, so he was sitting here having this, you know, notion of, you know, we're going to have this massive Republican demonstration. They're going to come from every county in Ireland, you know. We need to sit down now and have discussions in terms of how do we deal with commemorations in 2, 3, 4 years' time? And how can we do it in a way which recognises the sensitivities of other traditions separate from our own?
John, just on what you said there, David Irwin and Tom Hartley, I spoke about that together. I spoke about it about 7 or 8 years ago, and there was talk of trying to do that together where people could respect each other's anniversaries and stuff, but it didn't get off.
Well, let's, Jim, tonight then. I mean, there's plenty of folk here from east, west, north, south Belfast, and maybe further afield. Why don't two community groups here tonight, one Republican, one from a loyalist background, say, you know what, we'll do a joint application? So maybe that's something we'll come out of tonight. So maybe some loyalist or some Republican here have a coffee afterwards and say, maybe we should look at something like that. Because I know David and Tom did the programme together where they went to the Somme. I mean, it was viewed recently, but it was part of the East Belfast Festival where it was shown. You know, so I mean, there are things that have been done together. Okay, there's a couple of people now coming in for a second bite of the cherry. Is there anyone else that hasn't asked? Like, hold on. I'm trying to get people in that haven't asked, okay, before these males come back in again here with their claws and watching. Okay, Emily, go ahead.
So I heard you both mention that there were ratings issues that were resolved with less contention, that there were experiences where progress had been made, and certainly there's evidence to that effect. If you could nail it down to two things in those cases that worked really well, what would those two things be in the situation that had been resolved? And then just kind of boil it down as specific as possible if you can.
I'll give you one dialogue, meaningful dialogue.
There's one toleration.
So two more?
Well, they're interrelated, because if we don't sit down and engage with one another, we don't understand one another. So how can we create tolerance? How can we create mutual respect if we don't engage?
Okay, and what helps to create tolerance and dialogue in some specific? What has helped in the past in those situations that were resolved to a greater degree, make those things happen?
Recognizing we've got a mutual problem. And mutually we need to resolve that problem. Because, you know, it impacts not just in the short strand or Ardoyne, it impacts right across the country. And we've seen the consequences of Creighton in the past. So if we really believe in the peace process and the political process, and if we identify and analyse parades and parading scenarios and parading disputes, still having the potential to undermine that, then it's incumbent upon us all to try and get a resolution to them.
Okay. Anyone else that hasn't asked a question? Hedley, go ahead.
As I talk to people, as I go around groups and talk to people, there's a certain generation that remembers the parades being for all the community. Everybody went out to the parades. Everybody went to the rope con. Everybody did it. So my question is two-part. First of all, do you recognise that? That there was a sense of joint community ownership of parades? And the second part of the question is simple. What went wrong?
Well, to me, they're both easy. Yes, I remember the day, and still do. I would still see people, Martin in front of you watching the 12th parade in the Lisburn Road, but on Tapmore Avenue, you spot it twice. Leaving that aside, and who brought him along too was a Methodist minister. That's not. I recognise. I'm from a unionist area, but our neighbours before pre-70 were Roman Catholics. And they would have come out and watched the parades, and, you know, wished all the best. You get the stories in the rural areas of one farmer milks the other one's cows, right? Their own Catholic farmer milks the cows, and the Broadway goes to the parade. You get the whole story of the drums being passed, the tricolours covered in the orange lilies. And I have to say, yes, those things happen, but let's not look back, it was all rose tinted. There hasn't been a decade where there hasn't been an IRA terrorist campaign against this country to undermine it and attack the security forces for United Ireland. So while that was there, what really wrecked it was 1970, I think, is that there was conflict on her. The other terrorist campaigns were, you know, it didn't explode in the way this particular one did. So I think that's what largely damaged it. Now, I do still think you still see Roman Catholics in some places coming out. We're certainly in Belfast encouraging it, I have to say, particularly in the city centre. And I understand it's not everybody's cup of tea, it's not every prod's cup of tea. You know, let head off somewhere else, the caravan, or do whatever, golf, whatever they want to do, I have no issue with that. But it is a substantial section of this population still comes out on the 12th day across Northern Ireland to see the parade. I would certainly like to think that people can come out and watch the pageantry of it. They don't have to buy into our politics, but I think people do when they see it, say, particularly more with tourists, you hear them come and say the pageantry of that, the drums and all the colour and all. But from a nationalist perspective, I can see why, to them, there's aspects of that that has a bad memories for them throughout the Troubles. But I certainly would encourage people from all communities in Northern Ireland, it's Polish community, Hindu, Irish, and Catholic. And we're trying to make do that in the city centre specifically. We've had a campaign working. In fact, the city centre management would say it's a model project for running the parade through the city centre, of working with the shopkeepers, of having a community event in the afternoon so that they entertain people and they come into town. That means even if you want to see the parade, the town's still open in the afternoon to come in and shop on the public holiday. So certainly, what went wrong was the Troubles, basically, for me.
Well, I don't subscribe to this theory of the good old days. That's not my lived experience, folks, in relation to what happened. I wasn't born a Republican. I think the vast majority of Republicans now weren't born Republicans. It was events on the ground which made people make decisions whether to become a Republican or a Loyalist. People felt they did what they thought best for their respective communities, etc. And obviously parading, because parading, if we talk about parading as a microcosm or parading speech, a microcosm of current society, parading follows party to a certain extent. And that's what makes it so difficult and complex. Because Republicans would have seen parading as a form of, you know, lay down crappies. This is a Protestant parliament for a Protestant people. It's a Protestant state. It's an orange state. And that was our lived experience right up to, and that was one of the causal effects of the conflict breaking out in 1969.
And that classic line, the Protestant state for Protestant people.
Well, was it Republican who said it?
They forget the first Daniel part of the conversation. That's exactly
it. Daniel Cohn was wrong.
But it was in response to that, but it's quoted out of context.
Irish freedom's not worth a drop of blood.
Jerry Foote said that this campaign wasn't worth a broken leg.
Okay, any more quotations now while we're on this roll here?
I'll give you one. This is Jerry Foote again.
Okay.
And this is in Ragged Street in the Falls when Celtic won the European Cup. He says, we beat them on the football field, now we're going to beat them on the political field.
It'll be true, maybe, as far as George Strachan and that there was concerned, it was an emergence of Sinn Féin and political agitation within there. It caused a lot of strife between the present Catholics and the Catholics no longer come out to support the balance going back.
So there was no sectarian conflict before Sinn Féin emerged? Just come out of a vacuum?
Okay, I'm looking for anyone that hasn't asked a question before we open up the round two, but we will be finishing in 10-15 minutes, okay? So it'll not be a long round two, okay?
Okay. I'm trying to say that we didn't live together before 1969 because I grew up with about at least a dozen Catholics living on the street that I lived in. And in the surrounding area, where I was born around Woodstock Road, there was dozens of Catholics and intermarriages and everything before 1969.
Can I get?
Let me finish. And the gangs that we were living in, we had Catholics in the gangs. You know, so I remember another senator from the Short Strong saying, "I don't remember it like that." I just conveniently not remember that we did live together because we did. Prim Street, Parry Street, Mount Pottinger Road was filled with Protestants and Catholics. And East Belfast, I remember that well because I used to go to a poem from a mob around the corner and so I don't understand every time I hear a Sinn Féiner talking about the past that we didn't live. It's like we didn't live together, we didn't do things together. We, you know, I sectarianism came into me from 69. You know, before that I was wrong about becoming Catholics. But I've sat in meetings with sinners in the last 10-15 years and honestly, I get the same rhetoric from Sinn Féin. That's not the way it was. Tell me, I must have been living in a cloud. Could you not then?
You're still living
in a cloud. I lived in what's known as an interface area as well, bordering the Shankill. I never said we didn't live together. Of course, people lived together, but there was still a rift in terms of people's perception of the state and who the state serviced and who it didn't service. It's important to recognise that. So there was that dichotomy there in terms of people's understanding of it. It came to, obviously, a head in 1969, once you had this eruption on the back of the Civil Rights Campaign. So it's not a question of people weren't living together. I remember growing up as a kid.
People a family of eight and a two-bedroom house and an outside toilet, which was no different than a guy down the short strong.
I agree with you, but see the difference is. You know how the cap, you know,
right, like,
you know how they cap your allegiance? You got a job in the shipyard, you got a job in Mackey's. I live in Clannard. Mackey's was a big engineering works. How many Catholics work in Mackey's? You count them in one hand. So that's how they cap the allegiance of Protestant working class people. Of course you lived in the same working class conditions as I lived in. That's not an issue. But how did the Unionist Party retain the loyalty of Protestant working class people?
Fear the constitutional issue. Fear.
Okay.
There's always been.
Right, Brian going to come in. Rob, you want to go back in. John, you want to go back in. Okay.
There's always been sectarianism.
So let's keep this short because we're running out of time.
After the defeat of the First Home Rule Bill in 1886, there was violent. 50 people died in sectarian riots in Belfast. So there's always been sectarian. As I'm here. After partition, you had a third of the population in the country that didn't want to be in. and it wasn't resolved. It wasn't resolved. That issue was not resolved. They were not brought in for the cold for whatever reason, right? For whatever reason. But that was the issue. And they felt themselves in a cold house, which is fair enough. But that has been addressed. And the issue, but one, two things I want to say, address the issue of identity. People say it's either or, either Irish or British. I remember singing, believe it or not, in a Dublin. And a guy came up to me and says, you're half an Irish. And I says, that's right, I'm an Irishman, God save the Queen. And a Scotsman can say, I'm a Scotsman, God save the Queen. And a Welshman can say, I'm a Welshman, and God save the Queen. So it doesn't have to be either or, it can be both and, for me, anyway.
Well, I acknowledge that, Brian. Right. And that's the position within the Good Friday Agreement.
Yes. And the other thing is the spirit of generosity. The Good Friday Agreement came about in an atmosphere, in a milieu of generosity, a spirit of generosity. And unless that spirit of generosity is resurrected, and I think Brendan tried to bring it that way, you know, but unless we say, well, what do you need? What's your bottom line? Where we're looking at our opponents and saying, what do you need to move on? And they're looking at us and saying, what do you need to move on? Not having the ashtray down at that end of the table or an ashtray down at this end of the table. And they need to get together and they need that spirit of generosity. That has been lost. And we have now a sectarian, a more sectarian state now than we ever had before.
I have agreed with you in terms of compromise. You need to understand what are the basic needs of the people who you're sitting on the side of the table from. Because unless you fulfil those needs, you're not going to get a compromise or a resolution. It's finding that. And that's a two-way process. That's part of the problem. That needs reciprocation.
Yeah, just it's the old ones about the job discriminations and all. I think we sometimes do look back and forget about the context of the situation. As I always say, if you were a Jamaican arriving in a Welsh coal village in 1926, would you get a job in the coal mines? No, you wouldn't, because it went to the Welshman's son and his granddad and everybody else. And it's the same deep sea docks in Belfast. Would you get a job there as a prodge? No, because that was the Catholic preserve. That's the way society worked then, whoever owned the business or whatever. I don't see it in the sense of total control. That was just the way society was. Right or wrong, we can look back with our rights eyes on now and everything else, our rights glasses on, and say that shouldn't have happened, this happened. But it was a context of the day. It's the same as the state. I have to say, it does particularly irk me. You can't opt out of the state and then say the state discriminates against you. If you tell people not to join the police force because it's a police force of a state, then you can't say, well, it's 97% Protestant. When the Roman Catholic Church Archbishop advised members in 1923 not to join the police force. When if you did join and the troubles erupted and there was a campaign on and you were a Roman Catholic policeman and lived in Roman Catholic, chances are you were going to be shot as well. So then you can't say that was all about discrimination keeping out. Because anybody, I'm talking about the police because I know that background, that joined from a Roman Catholic background, always did pretty well in promotion way. So there wasn't that. I'm not saying everybody was perfect in anywhere. But what I'm saying is sometimes it's easy to look back from today and voice our views from the day on the past. What happened in the past was the context of its day. Maybe it was wrong on all sides, but it wasn't a one-way boat. You look, where did, was it 50,000 Protestants in the south, where did they disappear to? My own father, it was Donegal man, had to move north because he couldn't get work because he didn't fulfil the criteria of Irish speaking or the required limit, so he had to move north to get work. A lot of people were like that. So it was both states, and that's why it's important to say Protestant state. It's always forgot about that was in reply that what David Lair was saying. And it's as simple as that. So it's not one or the other, and I think that's that we have to recognise, and I certainly do, is it wasn't always one ticket, but equally there were the context of its day. I'm more interested in living today and seeing how we work out as a generation, and more importantly, for future generations, how we can work through these things. I welcome the absence of violence in the sense of the violence that we suffered 30 years ago, but there's equally unresolved issues around that. There's how to deal with the thing, there's how to deal with people don't see justice, and I particularly think of victims on this side when they think they're not going to get justice. You know, it's not going to come for them because the person will only get 2 years. We've never accepted that as a society, how it works that way. You know, and I think there's an awful lot of work to do, particularly in the unionist side. What's this mean for us? But it doesn't help that work when people are chipping away at your cultures and traditions, your sovereignty of your flag. It's hard to build up that confidence. It's hard to build up those relationships when that's constantly going on in the background. A prime example is Tordales there. For the sake of a 6 minute parade up the road, how can we get into serious future negotiations about the whole parade issue when there's not 6 minutes of toleration on a shared road?
Well, just from Marvin, Republicans and Nazis aren't outsiders. We're born here,
absolutely,
raised here,
absolutely,
generations here. So we're as much citizens of this country as anyone else. I think that's important to recognise. We're not second-class citizens.
Never
first-class, the same as everyone else in recent years. So unless there's a clear recognition of that, and we move forward on that basis. So we've identified a number of issues tonight that we need to deal with. Braden's one of them. Because it does retain the potential. It's important that people understand this. To take us back 20, 30, 40 years. And we can't allow that to happen. So unless we get real and trying to reach that accommodation. And we had that accommodation 4 years ago. But unfortunately, the Orange Order was allowed a veto in relation to it. I'm talking about the Hillsborough legislation, etc. So we're not that far off. It's possible, if the political will exists, that he would. And there can't be any victories for our side.
Okay, there are three people. I want short questions and then let the panel decide what they want to pick up. So, John, Rob, this young lady here, and then that gentleman in the back. So, okay, best wishes. Thanks, Mark, for coming. John, just give us a sentence here, because
they
literally made
it.
So they said, listen, you're not asking two at a time, just one, because there's three other people need to get in. Go ahead.
The question is to Sean. I was speaking to a senior Republican recently, and I put it to him that the union is safer than that ever was since the Confederate Agreement. It is safer. The constitutional claim has been dropped. The vast majority of both communities, both parts of Ireland, have recognised Northern Ireland remains its own UK until the majority wish to do so. In my opinion, three things will be required before that ever changes. First of all, there has to be a long period of peace building and genuine reconciliation within our society. Secondly, it has to be economically advantageous for all to do so. God knows that will ever happen. And thirdly, there will have to be cast iron constitutional guarantees that the British loyalist Protestant Orange identity would be recognised and cherished within any sort of unitary space. Now, they accepted that. And the third thing would probably be the easiest of those three to achieve. The economic realities, who knows what the future shows, but for me, a long period of reconciliation is a major prerequisite. That could be a generation, could be two generations, could be three. But that's what's going to be, that's the fundamental major prerequisite to having a united Ireland. So if you accept that, what is Sinn Féin doing?
Rob, just give us a sentence here. We're not going to get these sentences.
When are you going to get some honesty from Sinn Féin IRA? Touching on a point that Sean made, he was saying that there was a peaceful time before the Troubles, and we saw that by side by side. Sean was saying that there wasn't, and he wasn't born a Republican.
Sean didn't say that.
You
didn't
say you weren't born a Republican?
I said I wasn't born a Republican.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But I'm saying, I didn't say we weren't lived by side by side. I grew up in the face area, side by side, with other people.
My apologies. The question I'm trying to ask is, when you say to me that you weren't born a Republican, you know, Jerry always talks about his IRA parentage, smart community do the same. The young woman, Maria, who was raped there, talks about her parentage and her uncle, Joe Cahill, and everything. My attitude would be that, basically, senior Sinn Féin IRA people now, almost certainly were born Republicans.
No. Okay, guys. Right. There, and then this man here, and then with
it. It's just quickly, I mean, a few things around 1906, Stafford and Carter Strike. It was when working class people, both from the unionist and nationalist tradition, were getting together around workers' rights. That was split on the basis of sectarianism. So to say sectarianism was just a new phenomenon in 1969 is just completely wrong. So when you looked at the whole Covenant period, it's just some of the stuff Marvin touches on around terrorism, and I'd like to know what he actually means by terrorism, what's his terminology, because this is a new kind of terminology that's emerged from Western so-called democracies around trying to deal with world issues at the minute. In 1912, in the Covenant, there was a threat of violence then if they didn't get what they wanted in terms of the Home Rule Bill or opposing the Home Rule Bill. Other issues, I mean, there's an Irish language saying in City Hall, it's probably one of the only Irish language things there, and it's we live in each other's shelter. And I think that is a saying that could be used in terms of going forward. As was touched on earlier, we have a shared history that's complex, but it's shared. Union or Britishness and Irishness is intertwined, whether people like it or not, it's intertwined, and we need to learn how to live in each other's shelter in terms of moving these issues forward. Because to say, you know, making reference, if you want to be Irish, go down south, is not the way to resolve it. Because whether you like it or not, you know, I respect your Britishness, and people have to respect other people's Irishness, or if they want to be both. And that's the only way we're going to move forward. And again, it's more sessions like this. I think we're not doing enough of this. I know even councillors in City Hall, and we have ongoing discussions. We're not doing this, and we could learn from others. The Cenotaph in Derry, when they were looking at the whole issue of the Somme, actually had an event where they flew both flags together, so they can do it. Queen Elizabeth done it in Britain in a recent visit by Michael D. Higgins, the President of Ireland, where both flags were flown. If they can do it, in City Hall recently there was a quilt where there was XRUC, there was Republicans, there was Loyalists, there was people who weren't involved in anything who were hurt or injured or killed during the conflict. If they can share their conversations and discussions, why can't the rest of us? So I think initiatives like that, we can all learn from it. And it's going back to that phase that we live in each other's shelter. We're interdependent on each other, and we always have to remember that, because there's no separateness. No matter what the constitutional position will be, we'll have to rely on each other as people.
Okay, this gentleman at the back.
The SU tonight's great, and I've attended many meetings like this, and there's a big focus on PEL bonds. People forget there's also Republican bonds. Bonds used once on the City Hall, M16's built on their base zones, and AK47's built on the base zones, but that doesn't seem to be right. The focus point here, it seems to be PEL bonds. I see it where PEL bonds are concerned, that it's a celebration, that's provocation, and where Republican bonds are concerned, it's provocation, that's celebration.
Okay, so there's a wide range of issues there that will keep us here at 10 o'clock, which we're not going to do. So, yes, we can, yeah, but let's go.
Just this last chat, Mark. You heard me saying that I have a problem with bonds, yeah, including Republican bonds, because of some of the activities of the Republican bonds. So, it's not just about Loyalist bonds, etc. In relation to your point, sir, about people born Republicans, Johnny Adams could have been born in the Republican family. I wasn't. A lot of other Republicans weren't. In fact, from my perspective, I would say, talking to them, the vast, vast majority weren't born into Republican families. The Republican movement didn't exist in 1869. It was a family thing. It was events on the ground led people to make decisions whether to become Loyalists or Republicans, etc. So you're born into a conflict scenario, whether you like it or not. When I was growing up, there was a political time bomb taken away. I didn't know about it. You know, overnight, people's priorities changed, so you have to recognise that as well. And that goes for Loyalists as much as for Republicans. In relation to unification, it's about uniting people. It's not about uniting territory. I don't like using the term United Ireland. I'll tell you why. Talk to some unionist friends of mine. They've said, don't use the term United Ireland, because for me that's Republican partisans, and that indicates a Republican demand. So what I talk about is a new Ireland. And I see within a new Ireland, that's everyone's Ireland. And everyone has a right to have a say in relation to what type of society do we want to build in the future? It's not just a nationalist Republican demand. So looking at it from that perspective, and people will look at the economics of it, because if you're trying to bring up a family, you want a roof over your head, a good education, a prospect for a half-decent job. So if I'm out to convince people from a unionist background, a different political perspective from me, I have to convince them that it's in their interest to be part of that new Ireland, the same way as Mervyn will try and convince me and other people like me that my best interests will be served staying within the union.
Yeah, but what are you doing as a party to convince people? You know,
it's engaging with them. I'll give an example.
That's not really reaching out.
Reaching out is a talk, is engaging with people. Say to them, within the context of a new Ireland, how do I protect your sense of Britishness? And I think that's a very important conversation, because people from unionist background should be engaged with me now and saying, how do we identify and protect your sense of Irishness?
Well, it's difficult though when Sinn Féin take down the flag in City Hall.
Okay, right. Let's
right. They also took signs welcome people to Ireland on the border.
We need to bring other folk in here. Mervyn has to come in. Yeah. And we're not taking any more questions. I mean, we've done that. You know, we do need to finish at 9 to be fair, because I know other folk need to be home who have babysitters, etc., etc. Mervyn, do you want to pick up there on anything there?
Just a couple of things. Nobody's saying sectarianism started in 1689 and go back to 1641, the Protestants murdered in the River Bann and all that. You know, I mean, you go back fairly, I know. So nobody's saying sectarianism started then. With regard to the Queen, that's the very point. The Queen's the sovereign head of this state. So when another visiting head of state comes along, you put their flag up. That's one of the times you flap the gallery. So I have no issue with that, and it was the right thing to do. With regard to the formation of the UVF, it was probably the quietest time in Irish politics and the least attacks on any community, because they weren't a terrorist organisation in the sense of the weapon was used as a last resort, as opposed to going out and trying to bomb and maim and terrorise people, and that's where the word terrorism, terrorise people into something they don't want to do. And I think that's, I actually do think terrorism, Republican terrorism, has put a united Ireland back a couple of generations. I actually think politically, if people had tried to persuade us, it might be close. I don't think, I'm not saying I'd have rolled over and been persuaded, but I have no issue, and I welcome people now trying to persuade me into united Ireland. But the difficulty is, many of those people have a past where they didn't, where they murdered or tried to murder and bomb their way, and sadly, and seen them, and quite proud of that, or maybe proud's too strong a word. You know, they don't regret of many of those deaths, particularly of security force personnel. And so, how do people come to terms with the sudden shift? You know, it's hard to take. People think, well, we've changed now, so you must accept this.
But that's
the thing. No, accept the works deal. I can.
If Home Rule had been brought in, what would the UVF have done? Kiss National Theatre?
No, I would say. Actually, people forget the UVF was formed to fight the British Army. The UVF was formed to fight the British Army, not to fight Republicans.
Did it take up arms?
No, that's what I said, and totally. But it was a quietest period. There was no trouble. There wasn't sectarian.
Because there's no Home Rule. They got their demand.
Look, I'm going to draw the stake close. Just a couple of things, just as a kind of tie up there. There's a number of these seminars happening over the next while, okay? If you've given Sir your email address, if there's any other topics that you want considered, let Sir and myself know, and we can put something together. I mean, we're running these until sort of summer at least of next year, so there's a series of 8 of those. The next seminar is on another controversial subject of the Irish language, that's on November the 19th. So I think Sirs will be passing out some brochures there in relation to that. But make sure you have your email, because I mean we're going to be looking at flags and symbols in 2015. So we're trying to touch as many issues as possible. And if I do email you, I mean, try and spread the word. I take this gentleman's point at the back in relation to the ban. So, you know, let us just try to get up a data list. And can you do the evaluation, sir, as well? So, sir, would you pass those out? Sir has pens, so she'll pass you a pen there and do that evaluation. Just makes things helpful. And just in closing, can we thank Sean and Mervyn? I mean, a number of people have said these things are important. They're crucial that we begin to understand each other, because we've grown up in silos and we just need to understand each other in a different way. I mean, I remember a friend of mine who's a Republican said to me, Gary, I don't want to make you any less a unionist than I know you want to make me less a Republican. So it's about hearing each other's story and understanding each other, and that's a key. So can we just show appreciation to them?